What is it that makes us, as humans, different, even, shall I say, better than monkeys? Well, maybe not much these days, but we do have a few things going for us as a species. We have art and we have the sciences. We innovate and we create. That's what makes us different and, yes, better than our pesky primate cousins. Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Hanna. Welcome to Better Than Monkeys from WQLN Radio. Well, you know, the creative art of crafting political satire, it's nothing new. Aesop, Perseus, and Petronius were sending out precautionary tales as early as 600 BC. William Shakespeare pitched a barbed word or two at the aristocracy. Mark Twain's sharp tongue ruffled a few feathers. Even Dr. Seuss waxed rhapsodic of things idiotic. But today's mass media brings political satire to the fore and makes virtual folk heroes of political satirists. Before there was Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, before Bill Maher and Dennis Miller, there was a singular voice, and a bow tie, and a star-spangled piano. That voice belonged to Mark Russell. Between 1975 and 2004, Mark Russell and PBS joined forces on a series of specials which aired live at least four times a year. It was a mix of stand-up and musical parodies. Russell's trademark was a style involving replacing lyrics of famous standard tunes with witty political subject matter. Subject matter that was fresh and up-to-date, Mark himself relating that his jokes and songs are topical and timely and have a shelf life shorter than cottage cheese. When asked if he has any writers helping him write, he quips, "Oh yes, I have 535, 100 in the Senate, and 435 in the House of Representatives." And once, when asked if his views on current events are too caustic, Russell replied, "I follow the old newsman's adage. As they say, I don't make the news, I just report it. And in my case, I don't even make the jokes, I just report them as they masquerade as news." Well, that great statesman of political satire, Mark Russell, is retired now, mostly, living back in Western New York, and he was gracious enough to take a few minutes out of his busy retirement schedule to spend some time with us here on Better Than Monkeys. Here's my interview with the great Mark Russell. Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Hanna from WQLN Radio, and joining us today via the phone, Mark Russell joining us. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's a delight to talk to you in Erie. I know all about your town, Gannon University, and the home of the great political scientist David Kozak, who forgot more about politics than I'll ever know. And then there's Tom Ridge, the first Secretary of Homeland Security. And thanks to Tom Ridge, Al-Qaeda never invaded Erie.
as far as we know.
Then I did some shows for the Thomas Jefferson Society.
Right.
And the Thomas Jefferson Society merged with the Sally Hemings Society. Let me do that joke once again. The Thomas Jefferson Society merged with the Sally Hemings Society. So it's great to hook up with you.
Well, thank you so much. You know, why is it so important, do you think, Mark, to approach politics with a sense of humor?
Well, without it, we would be more out of sorts than we already are. We hear so much the last few days about there's a mental health problem in America, and there is a mental health problem because most of us started going crazy on election day 2016. We need it, and I need it because I need the money.
Well, is election season, you know, we've got another one coming up very shortly here. Is that like Christmas for you?
Well, it always was. Every year. You say we have an election coming up. It's hard to believe. I have to keep reminding myself that the election is a year from November. And actually, I'm sort of retired. I tell people I'm retired because there's no material. and I'll be 87 this month. And you know you're 87 when you believe that Joe Biden is too young to be president. Actually, that's not true. I mean, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders have the combined age of a redwood tree.
Would that be the ticket you would hope for to run just for comedic fodder?
Yeah, it would be. I also like Pete Buttigieg, He's already in the Guinness Book of Records being the most overqualified mayor of South Bend, Indiana in history.
Well, you know, granted, most of your career has been built around finding the humor in political moments throughout our fine history here, but who make the best subject?
Well, the Democrats always said that the Republicans don't have a sense of humor, and the Republicans say the Democrats don't have a sense of humor. They're both wrong. Over the years they've been equal opportunity contributors. I used to, when I was on public television and I was almost required to be bipartisan, that would be very difficult today. And the most successful comedians doing politics today, they're not bipartisan. I mean, almost all of them, they're anti-Trump. It's just too easy. I don't know how I would handle that. I honestly couldn't be bipartisan. I mean, I just couldn't. But and that doesn't bother me because I'm not working now anyway.
Do you think it leads to a little bit of fatigue when all of the comedians are working towards the same end?
Yeah, we had Comedy Week here at Chautauqua last week, and somebody pointed out that this is just a one joke thing. It's a one trick pony. The whole idea of the whole Trump thing, and it hasn't done any good. I was thinking this morning, you know, people talking about background checks. Well, background checks don't work. We check Trump's background, and we elected him anyway. So now we have a trade war with China, and the difference between a trade war and a regular war is in a trade war, most of the casualties are farmers. So there's just the thing with Trump, there's something every day.
Right.
Every day. And so
there's
I don't
plenty
know
of
how,
material.
Because the Capitol steps were here last week. And I don't know how they do it, because you could have a reference on Monday, and by Wednesday or Thursday, people have forgotten about it. They're onto the next thing. I mean, we had he has these rallies, which really look, I hate to say this, but you look at those rallies, it's a guilty pleasure watching them, because they look like Nuremberg rallies in World War II, and then there's a mass shooting, and then Trump all of a sudden comes on like Billy Graham, for heaven's sake. So,
well, you know, people do get a little fatigued, so sometimes comedians will go and look for a new subject to feed their scripting.
Well, yes, Stephen Colbert does that. He'll do his politics, and then he sits down at the desk, and the segment called Meanwhile, and then he digs up little things, little silly things in the news that have nothing to do with politics. But you talk about fatigue. I mean, I had Trump fatigue in 2015, a year before he was elected. And so he's the gift that keeps on giving, but it's too much.
Well, we're going to have plenty of fodder over the next 13, 14 months here, so hopefully they'll find some new material to run with in the comedy world, you know.
I may go back to Harry Truman, you know? he was a president. You sound like a kind of a young guy to me. I have to tell you that.
So I know that politicians tend to be your primary subject, but is there anybody that's off limits for a political comedian?
Anybody, any person?
Yeah, any persons that you would think would be off limits for comedy fodder?
No, none.
If you're public, it's fair game?
Absolutely none, nor is any subject off limits. And I would ask people, well, give me an example. And they would say, well, abortion. Well, doctors have told us that a 20-week-old fetus at 20 weeks can fondle itself and feel pleasure. I actually saw that quote of a gynecologist. A fetus at 20 weeks can fondle itself and feel pleasure. Now, as I recall, in my case, it was more like 15 weeks.
Our listeners will love those kind of jokes because, you know, usually our subject matter is so serious here on Better Than Monkeys.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Oh, it's always serious. And that's the thing. This goes back to your first question. It's all these things are serious, but we can get so bummed out. I mean, politics the last couple of years has ruined family Thanksgivings and family Christmases. And so now I run into people and they say, well, in our family and our friends, we have a rule. We talk about politics for about a minute. And then before people start throwing food at each other, we just go to family and sports and so forth. I remember when I was working at a hotel in Washington, and around the holidays, people would come in and they say, oh, you got to hear this guy. And they bring the family in for Thanksgiving. It's usually like the day after where they're all kind of sick of each other, so they go to a nightclub to hear a comedian, me, you know. And there was always one uncle, an old uncle, who was upset with what I was saying about Nixon. So he'd get up and go out and wait in the car. So I would ruin family gatherings like that.
You're listening to Better Than Monkeys from WQLN Radio. You're listening to Better Than Monkeys, an original podcast of WQLN Radio. If you're enjoying this episode and you would like to hear more episodes of Better Than Monkeys, episodes featuring the great trumpeter Wynton Marsalis, Broadway legend Chita Rivera, so many wonderful stars, well, you can find them by visiting us on the web at wqln.org/BTM. And we're going to be back to our regular episode of Better Than Monkeys, this episode featuring Mark Russell, in just a second. But in case you're not familiar with the comedic stylings of Mark Russell, let me give you just a short example. Here is Mark Russell live in concert.
I'm not in the baby boomer generation. I'm not in the greatest generation. I'm in the one in the middle. There's one in the middle. A lot of you are too. We never caused any trouble at all. We never had a label. We stayed below the radar all our lives. We never protested. We never demonstrated. We were drafted. We went. We were too young for World War II, too old for Vietnam. We never had a label. Let's face it, we didn't deserve one because we were the dullest generation in the history of this country. How dull were we? Yes, we wore T-shirts. What was written on those T-shirts? Nothing! Am I right? We didn't have enough imagination to put anything on a stupid T-shirt. Totally ignored. But the baby boomers, my God, from the day they were born to this day, the media focused on the baby boomers. Whoa, the baby boomers are now in school. Whoa, the baby boomers are now in college. Whoa, the baby boomers just got married. Whoa, the baby boomers are now middle-aged. Whoa, the baby boomers just turned 60. I turned 60. Nobody gave a A man gave me a wonderful compliment. He said, we always watch your shows on PMS. Congress threw me a terrible curve. They decided to compromise. I panicked. I didn't get in this business for compromise. There was a Democrat, Joe Biden, and the Republican, Senator Mitch McConnell, and they were standing on the edge of the fiscal cliff. I wanted both of them to jump off. I really did. All right, so the Senate passed a bill. It went over to the House of Representatives. Time was running short. The clock is ticking. The American people, very suspenseful. I don't know how you spent your New Year's Eve, but that's what I did, watching these idiots. And they got the bill. Did they vote on the Senate bill? No. They voted on a thing called the Drywall Safety Act. What the hell was the Drywall Safety Act that would take precedent? Is that's the problem today? It's drywall. Well, they voted on that. It was a 5-minute vote. Then they took up the all-important Senate bill. But first, they gave tax breaks to the electric scooter industry, NASCAR, and imported rum, giving the American people what they want, apparently, which is NASCAR scooter races under the influence of imported rum. The thief did not like having my identity. He did not like being an 80-year-old comedian with arthritis. You know you're 80 when you remember Pearl Harbor, but you don't remember what she did. You know you're 80 when you confuse Warren Buffett with Jimmy Buffett. You know one owns Margaritaville and the other owns the gross national product, but you forget which is which. You know you're 80 when you remember a time when tweet. Jesus. Tweet was the sound a bird makes when he poops on the hood of your car. You men, you know you're 80 when you go to the bathroom and you realize that as far as you're concerned, trickle down does not apply to economics.
Just a sample of the comedic stylings of the political satirist Mark Russell. I'm Brian Hanna. Again, you're listening to Better Than Monkeys, an original podcast of WQLN Radio. And we're going back right now to part two of my interview with comedian Mark Russell.
Have you ever had, and I'm sure you have, a post-joke awkward moment where the subject of your jabs maybe was in the audience and then confronted you after?
Yeah, I've had people tell me that they were in the audience, but I didn't know it. I remember one of Nixon's daughters, or they would hide in the back. So it was just as well that I didn't know they were in the audience. And but that happened.
Knowing they were there, would that have changed your approach to that particular show or to your jokes?
No comment. No, that would be, I would have to make a snap decision. They would usually tell me this just before I went on. I also worked a theater in D.C. And the theater manager would say, let me tell you who's out there. I said, don't tell me. Don't tell me. I'll chicken out. That's the worst thing you can do, is be accused of caving or wimping out knowing the person who was in the audience. Sometimes I just did an event at Ford Theater with Colin Powell, and he came up to me beforehand and he said, are you going to say anything about me? I said, no. And then he said, you're not.
He was disappointed.
And it's a funny, where they really don't want to be mentioned is if I go to their hometown.
Right.
That's very embarrassing if you take after them in front of their people, in front of their constituents. I'd say, well, Congressman so-and-so is here tonight, and I noticed, Congressman, you wear your older suit when you come in here. You know, in D.C. you've got the $1,000 Gucci suit, but here you've got the one from Robert Hall. And then, you know, it's a gentle little thing. But where they really don't want to be mentioned is if they were indicted that day.
Which is a daily occurrence in Washington, D.C.
Very often, yes. Yeah, they come in with their parole officer.
In the tradition of the fine Hollywood roast, those are always done with a touch of love and even a little respect, even though they can get a little bawdy from time to time. But your stuff really does tend to hit home, yet Washington has embraced you for decades. So why do you think that is?
Well, for a long time, I was the only guy in town doing that. That was a place to go. I've been criticized over the years for being too gentle. That's worse than being too mean, I guess.
Right.
These days, you're too gentle with it. Well, I try to have a balance and so forth. Although I've often been accused of being unbalanced myself.
Well, you know, I also wanted to ask you about your iconic look, you know, the bow tie, the suit coat, the star-spangled piano. How did you come up with your iconic stage persona and that outfit?
Well, the bow tie, it was a total affectation. It was to make me look more intellectual than I actually was. And actually, any lawyer will tell you that you wear a bow tie and you get out of it'll get you out of jury duty. we're known to be eccentric and flaky.
And then,
eccentric and flaky is the name of a law firm in Washington, actually. And so the piano, I didn't want to be a comedian when I was a kid. I wanted to be a jazz piano player.
Right. I read you even had your own orchestra when you were a young kid.
I had a band. We played at the Friday night the Catholic school dances, where you couldn't hold the girl too close, or you have to go to confession. And so I had a band, but I really wanted to play jazz, but only knowing three chords, it was kind of limiting.
Even now, do you sit down at the piano and bang out some Beethoven or play a little jazz once in a while just for fun?
Banging out Beethoven. That would be a good title of an album, wouldn't it?
It would, absolutely.
Riffing with Chopin. Yeah, I do, just to keep it going. And I I just forget where the keys are. But I love the piano. I had a teacher who, actually my teacher in Buffalo, his son went to Hollywood and wrote a movie. He wrote the score of All the President's Men. He wrote the Rocky music.
Right.
And his name was David Shire. David Shire. And his father was my teacher in Buffalo. And David Shire married Thalia Shire, who was in the Rocky movies.
Wow, that's a great connection to have there. Was that your first Hollywood connection?
Yeah. This teacher, before that, I had teachers who would come to the house, or I'd come to the teacher's house, and then she'd move without leaving a forwarding address.
Oh, so when you're doing your specials and your comedy shows, do you like to script your stuff and do a very tight show, or do you like to shoot from the hip, or do you like to mix it up a little bit?
Well, the shooting from the hip, you can make it look like an ad lib, and all comedians do this. They might say, oh, by the way, as if they just thought of something, but they may have written it down 6 months earlier. On the public television show, it was literally live, not live on tape, right, but literally live. So I would have an idea what I was going to do by subject, and then it was a real challenge where something happened that day. I had to address it. I might, if I was lucky, write a song, but then it was too late to commit the song to memory. So I would literally duct tape the words to the bottom of the lens of the camera.
Early teleprompter.
And that was it was a challenge, but it made a nice impression, because the more topical you are, the more effective it is. But since it was PBS, there were no commercials, so once you started, that was it. You couldn't, a lot of shows, they'll go to commercial and then the director will say, let's see, we're running a little short here, we better take this out, take that out. But you can't do that when you're literally live. If I had a clinker on the piano, which was an occasional occurrence, where the audience heard that. And one night, the sound went out. We lost the sound, and the viewers at home. We lost the picture. That was it. And the viewers at home, all of a sudden, their screens went black, but the sound was working. And so at that time, Newt Gingrich was one of these people who wanted to cut off all federal funding to public television.
Right.
And so the picture went out, and it was out for about 30 seconds, which is like an eternity. And so the picture went out, and I said, well, it looks like Newt Gingrich got his win.
That was perfect timing on your part. You know, you're known for your perfect timing. That's one of the things
sometimes it's more perfect than others.
More perfect than others.
But that was, I lucked out with that one. And then whenever something like that happens, there are people who say, oh, you set that up. They won't give you credit.
No,
you know?
Absolutely.
Well, you set that up. But no, I didn't set it up.
You did spend a little time dodging the draft, from what I understand, but you dodged it in a most creative way by, right out of almost high school, just college age, joining the Marines. And you spent a few years
in the
Marine Corps.
That's how I dodged the draft, joined the Marines. And the Korean War was still going on, but I didn't go to Korea. I wound up in Hawaii, which could be rough.
It could be rough.
Time to time. Sometimes the pineapples were a little overripe, and it was really rough. I tell people it was during the Korean War, the Forgotten War. I never forgot. I was wounded during that war. It was in Tijuana, but I was wounded.
So what was your job in the Marines?
My job was as a naval gunfire spotter. We would land on the beach, and there's a Hawaiian island that's unoccupied, and it was used as a target so Navy ships could practice firing on this island. And the targets were just old trucks and trees and things like that. So I'm on the beach with my radio, and I'm talking to the gunners on the destroyer, and I using these coordinates, and I said, "No, you're too far, you shot over the target," and so forth. And that island, as I say, it was unoccupied, just a great big rock about a mile long. It's called Kualaui. And thanks to me, the communists never took over Kualaui, just like Al-Qaeda never invaded Erie.
So
that's what I did.
So that island's a little smaller, thanks to you also, I would think.
No, sometimes they shot right over it. Missed it completely. It's a good thing they didn't hit Maui.
You did 30 years of PBS specials, give or take.
Yes.
Well, why was that such a good fit, you and PBS?
It actually served as an audition. If an agent wants to book somebody in a theater, or for a private event, a banquet or something, the drill usually is, well, send us a tape so we can see this guy. Well, my show served that purpose. It served that purpose. And so they would look at the show and they'd say, well, all right, he'd be good for our theater or for our group. I did a lot of these private corporate gigs, and I found out that the corporate people are more thin-skinned than the politicians. They were always saying to me, don't talk about this, don't talk about that. Well, to me, that was an
open invitation.
and I would do it anyway, because there's always a way. And often they say at the end, well, that worked out fine. But they do. One time, I was doing a show for Westinghouse, and Westinghouse was very involved with nuclear power. And they said, don't say anything about nuclear power. And I said, did it ever occur to you that I'm for nuclear power? Oh, well, we didn't mean that. And there was a little game I would play. I'm sitting there at the head table. I'm next to the CEO of whatever the corporation was. And I would say to the CEO, before I go on, I want you to know that I don't plan to say anything about the lawsuit. And they always would say, hey, thanks a lot, we appreciate that. And I don't even know if there's a lawsuit or not. There's always a lawsuit.
There's always a lawsuit.
But I did that all the time. And every one of them said, hey, thanks, I really appreciate that.
That just makes you think a little deeper about what we're really getting into, doesn't it? Do you prefer more intimate social events like corporate gigs, things like that, or do you prefer the big PBS specials? Do you like big halls?
I like theater. Like Chautauqua, it was 5,000 people.
Right.
And theaters, most of these theaters are 400 or 500 people. And those are the better audiences, because that's why they came in there to see me. And they always anticipate what I might be talking about, whether it's Watergate or whatever the game is going on. The corporate things, as I said, they're more thin-skinned, and they're not all they're interested in every gem that trickles from my lips. I mean, there's so many things going on at those events, the awards, the financial report, and you have to sit there through all of that. Frankly, there was more money involved than the theaters, but I much enjoyed the theaters, and Chautauqua was just the greatest. That was the first big audience I ever played, and I played there. The first show was 40 years ago this summer, 1979, and I had never played for that many people, but the PBS show had been on a couple of years, and they also knew I was from that area. I'm originally from Buffalo, and I also lived in Jamestown for a while, and so that was really a thrill, and that's when I started doing theaters.
Well, you know, Jamestown's now home to the National Comedy Center. Have you been up to visit yet?
That is absolutely dynamite. If your listeners haven't been there, I mean, you're so lucky. It's so near, and it's really the Cooperstown of comedy, and they go way back. They go back to Aristophanes and the Greeks, and then they come right up modern day. Louis Black, George Carlin. And it's just a shrine, and it's enormously successful, and so it's kind of a destination. I mean, tourists, they can go to Cooperstown, they can go to Niagara Falls, and they can go to Cleveland, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then they can come to Jamestown, not only for the Comedy Center, but also the Lucille Ball, which has been there for many years, Lucille Ball Museum, and they're in partnership with the Comedy Center, and so Jamestown is really a rocking place these days, I'll tell you.
You know, so much comedy coming out of Western New York. Why do you think that is? The long cold winters?
Oh yeah, and not only Congressman Chris Collins, but there are other things. Yes, well, it's true, and also music. I mean, when I was a kid in Buffalo, there were musicians that later went with the big bands, Tommy Dorsey, Stan Kenton, tremendous. And then Fredonia, the music school there.
Turned out some great players.
And so it's an awful lot happening in Western New York. The thing is, when I was playing colleges, didn't matter where I was, it would be Wyoming or Montana, and there's on every college campus, there's always a big bulletin board for opportunities for the students. And this would, they say, attention, music students, go to Chautauqua and study music and play in the student symphony and so forth. And so the kid goes home and tells her parents about Chautauqua. They say, where's the New York? And they say, New York? Wow, you're not going to New York. You know, they think it's the South Bronx or something. And Western New York. First of all, Western New York is really in Pennsylvania. It's really in Ohio. God did not draw those lines.
Right.
And so it's the least known part of New York. It really is. But it's I'm glad to I'm proud to have been from there. And I tell people I still have a winter home in Buffalo. And wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. But
it is a beautiful place.
We don't talk about the weather anymore. I mean, I told the Buffalo Chamber of Commerce, be proud of your weather. Put out a sign, welcome to Buffalo, where the weather keeps out the riffraff.
That's speaking why we're such an exclusive club.
It's like this is the 50th anniversary of Woodstock.
Right.
Which, I'll never forget Woodstock. I was home listening to my Kate Smith records. And you'll have to Google Kate Smith because you obviously don't know who she was.
I know who Kate Smith was. I'm older than you think.
I thought Fleetwood Mac was a Cadillac dealer.
You also did a lot of television. You did Real People for a while. Which was a terribly successful show, launched a lot of careers, really launched a kind of reality TV show genre that we're kind of enjoying or despising, how you want to look at it now. But you did that for many years. How did you end up working with real people?
Well, they saw the PBS show. Right. And the producer was George Schlatter. And he had an even more successful show a few years earlier. You may remember Laugh-In.
Right.
Ronan Martin's Laugh-In. And that show produced Lily Tomlin and Goldie Hawn. And real people, we just, there was a whole cast of us, it was about half a dozen of us. Fred Willard was probably the best known of the cast. At the same time, there was a show called That's Incredible.
Right, John Davison, I think.
People would say, they'd say, aren't you the older guy on Real People? I said, no, I was the younger woman on That's Incredible.
Well, was that a highlight of your career, or was it just a bookmark along the way?
Well, it was, it got me into mainstream television for a while there. I lived that bi-coastal life. My wife and I had a condo in L.A. We did the whole L.A. thing, and then when the show went off the air, then I didn't stay out there. I don't know. It might have been a career mistake. But I still have that Washington pull, and we call it Potomac fever. So I went back, and I mean, I went on the road an awful lot, but I didn't permanently live in Los Angeles. George Schlatter would always kid me. He'd say, "Now go out there and just wow the audience with your material on the House Ways and Means Committee." He's always It was always a little too Washington, but that was the whole point of it. The older guy with the bow tie and so forth was kind of a contrast to the others on the show. Sarah Purcell, Skip Stevenson, and Fred Willard. And so George Schlatter wanted my input, whatever it was, even though sometimes it was over the audience's head.
It was, you know, it was a wonderful show, though, and a wonderful cast. It really was. It was a wonderful show, and it was a wonderful cast. And it was really groundbreaking. So no matter what, it's got to be exciting to have been part of that.
Oh, yeah, it was. That's on the resume right after Gannon University.
So, you know, it's important to talk about politics in a way that gets people involved and thinking for themselves. Do you kind of picture yourself maybe as a bow-tied Bob Dylan speaking to the people through comedy and maybe song?
That's a new one. Bow-tied Bob Dylan, how about that? No, the thing, I think these late-night shows have been accused of how the young people, it's where the young people get their news.
Right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. At least they're getting the news. Now, they're getting it with a little bit of a slant.
Sure.
But they're getting it. I used to audition for The Tonight Show and some of those shows. And so the producer would say, okay, what are you going to talk about? You know, what are you going to say? And I might say something like, well, I see where Robert McNamara is, and they stopped me and said, hold it. You can't say Robert. You got to say the Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara. All right, say, well, I'm going to talk about Winston Churchill. They say, you can't say Winston Churchill. You've got to say the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Winston Churchill. Today, you don't have to do that. Everybody knows who everybody is. For example, James Corden, who follows Colbert. You watch James Corden. Now he's I love his style. You know, he's English. He's a young guy, but he works like an old British music hall comic. And he comes out and he will say, "Did you see what happened in the House Judiciary Committee today?" It's incredible. He doesn't say good evening. It just gets right to it, and the audience is with him. You know, they're getting their news, and I think a lot. I mean, Colbert is the most intellectual. He can do a serious on his old show on Comedy Central. He'd have Henry Kissinger on. He would have cabinet members on, and he'd be right there with him.
He's very tuned in.
And then he'd turn around and do some comedic shtick, and there's never been anybody like him.
Now, you should send him some of your bow ties, see if we can dress him up a little bit. And
no, I have a patent. My lawyer won't let me do that. I'm
well,
to wear the bow tie. I said, is that a real bow tie? I said, yeah, but the shirt is a clip-on.
Early in the conversation, we'd mentioned that Trump has just been a continuous source of fodder for all the comedians over the last couple of years, and it looks like it's going to continue for quite a while yet. If you had one piece of advice after all your years in Washington, D.C., for Donald Trump, what would it be?
How about shut the blank up? People, they bring up Trump, which is all the time, and I tell them, you know, I told you I went to Catholic school.
Right.
And so, as a Christian, I am required to love Donald Trump, but I needed assistance. So I asked God to help me love Donald Trump. And God said, that's funny. His mother asked me to do the same thing.
I'm glad I gave you space to get that one in.
Well,
I appreciate you taking some time to talk with us here on WQLN Radio today. I know your time is valuable.
Thanks for the opportunity today in Erie.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to your lovely wife, Allie, for helping get everything set up for this interview. We really appreciate that,
great,
too.
Thank you, Brian.
So thanks very much, Mark. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Thank you.
What a pleasure to talk to the great political satirist and comedian, Mark Russell. I hope you enjoyed this interview. What a insightful look at a long and storied career of a great comedian and American icon, Mark Russell. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more episodes, episodes featuring Wynton Marsalis, Chita Rivera, Bela Fleck, we have astronomers and anthropologists and authors, so many wonderful episodes of Better Than Monkeys available. Well, you can find them all online at wqln.org/BTM. You can just do a Google search for Better Than Monkeys, or you can check us out on SoundCloud and NPR One. We're all over the interwebs. Just look, I'm sure you can find us. Again, I'm Brian Hanna. Thank you so much for joining me for Better Than Monkeys. It's a production of WQLN Radio.